The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Reader's Digest, and will also read a piece from the Saturday Evening Post. Our first article from the Inspiration column of the Reader's Digest. May I speak to a person? Students at this help desk will happily answer your questions, no matter how bizarre, or just take the time to chat. By Emily McCrary from the Oxford American. If you sit at the James E. Foy Information Desk in the Melton Student Center at Auburn University in Alabama on a Wednesday night, you might be responsible for answering a question like this. If you died on the operating table and they declared you legally dead and wrote out a death certificate and everything, but then you came back to life, what are the legal ramifications? Do you technically no longer exist? Do you have to be declared undead by a judge? A little later, the phone will ring again and the caller might ask, "Who is the most famous person in the world?" Your next question might be, how do you get the super serum in Call of Duty? And finally, when you pick up the phone close to 11 o'clock, quitting time, you might hear someone blow a giant raspberry and then hang up. I spent the better part of 2 days and nights listening to students answer questions at the Foy desk, where phones have been ringing since 1953, when James E. Foy, then Auburn's Dean of Student Affairs, opened the line as a resource for students and then as a service to the public. For just as long, students who sit there have been answering any question asked of them, or at least trying their best. The Foy desk looks different today than it did 70 years ago. For starters, it's in an expensive, modern-looking student center. The old Foy Hall still exists, and now houses a few small student engagement offices. There used to be stacks of books at the desk, encyclopedias and dictionaries, reference texts, phone books, the Old Farmer's Almanac, the Guinness Book of Records, and Emily Post Etiquette, but they've been replaced by 3 desktop iMacs, whose backs are blue and orange, like the school's colors. As for the phone number, with the exception of an update to the area code in 1995, it's still the same, 334-844-4244. A day's worth of calls to the Foy desk would look a lot like someone's browser history. What is the Seroxifan prescribed for? What's the average cost of an acre of land in Texas? What's the cheapest property in New Jersey? How much is Elon Musk worth? What's the customer service phone number for Costco? How much is a ticket to the Super Bowl? What is watercress? What is that weird smell? Are the Apple AirPods Pro 2 waterproof? What do I do if there's a snake in my house? About 13 million people in the United States and 2.6 billion people globally don't use the Internet, whether for reasons of availability, desire, cost, or religion. Some may have it, but don't feel confident using it. To the desk's callers, who dial from all over the world, these students are the Internet. And luckily for the callers, the students are remarkably non-judgmental when it comes to the questions they are asked. The employee manual for the Foy desk is 10 sheets of 8.5 by 11 inch paper, with instructions on how to clock in and out and pick up shifts. Training for the phones is minimal. More or less, the rules are these. Be as polite as possible. End the call if the question is offensive. Don't answer anything that sounds like a homework question. And if someone makes a threat, hang up immediately and dial star 57. That helps the police trace the call. Then tell your supervisor. During the day, the Foy's desk phones ring about 10 to 15 times an hour. Most of the calls are from the general public. Occasionally, Auburn students call to ask about basketball tickets or whether their jackets ended up in the lost and found. As classes wrap up for the afternoon and the sun sets, the big windows that filter sunlight turn into mirrors. Calls become less frequent, so students working at the desk settle into their homework. It's a perk of the job. By 9 o'clock, the student center is quiet. That's when people like Beulah call. Beulah has a lot of pets and an affinity for bearded dragons. She seems to attract wild animals, too. There's been a fox in her yard, a snake in her house, a spider on her curtains. She has called the desk more than once to ask for the phone number of an exterminator. While most callers are off the line in less than 2 minutes, Beulah's calls usually last at least 15. But who she is, the students hardly know. Callers' accents are sometimes a giveaway, but hers isn't Southern, nor is it apparently from the Northeast, where her area code suggests she lives. Kamran Kimber, an overachieving junior who is studying business management, loves getting Beulah's calls. She sounds like, oh my goodness, who was the lady who played in The White Lotus? He stops to think. Jennifer Coolidge. She sounds like her. Students glean information about their regular callers slowly. They're not expressly forbidden to ask questions, but this is Alabama, and many of the students working at the desk were born and raised here or come from neighboring southern states, which means they have exceptional manners and don't go poking around in someone else's business. Even when drunk people from frat parties call, many student workers don't hang up unless the partygoers say something inappropriate. After all, being intoxicated doesn't mean you don't have a legitimate question. With so little information, students are left to imagine who each caller might be. They stitch together an image informed by the caller's voice, accent, area code, and questions. In the 2010s, there was Care Home Lady, who called every night. Matt Shorn was picking up the phone back then when he was an undergrad. He can't remember the nature of Care Home Lady's questions, just that he imagined her sitting alone in a nursing home and that he was always happy to stay on the phone as long as she needed. You can't help but imagine what they're like and in what setting, he tells me. Is she just sitting in a rocking chair at night and just picks up that phone and keeps dialing Foy? Did she spend all day thinking about what question to ask? Even though they don't know much about the lives of their regulars, the students miss them if they don't call. I asked some of the students about the last time they heard from Beulah, and no one can name a recent call. I really hope she's okay, one of them says, looking a little grave. Braxton Stacy is a senior studying industrial and systems engineering. He comes from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, a small town on the Tennessee River, close to the borders with Mississippi and Tennessee. He has the pleasing and hard-to-identify southern accent of someone who comes from a border town. He's a supervisor at the desk, which means that he mostly checks people into reserved conference rooms in the student center and locks up the building at the end of the night. He's also backup for the three students who are answering calls. But before his promotion, he worked the phones. He tells me that one night, this old woman called, and this is the only time I ever talked to her, but she talked for almost an hour. She honestly wasn't asking much of anything, but she told me, and I don't know how true this is, she told me that one of her friends had recently passed away, and so she was just calling to talk. That felt good, just to let her talk to me. I didn't have to say much. She needed somebody. She told him about her grandkids and her house needing repairs and how she was getting them done. Ordinary things. It wasn't anything too specific, he says, except for her friend. Calls like these don't come in as often as ones about, say, whether a certain type of rocking chair is on sale at Lowe's or what the weather will be this weekend in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. But every single one gets the same amount of respect. There's a lot of yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, Students say they know which callers expect to be addressed that way. The thicker the Southern accent, the greater the expectation. Call after call comes in during the hours that I sit at the desk. Someone calls to ask about the net worth of a real estate investor named David Lichtenstein. Another, who sounds like a tiny child, asks how far it is from Earth to Pluto. The questions are so varied, so unique, that I ask the students, "Don't you wonder why these people call?" Yes, sometimes, they tell me, but as far as they're concerned, it's none of their business. They admit that some people feel the need to explain why they call so often. It's that they live out in the sticks or can't afford the internet. But to these students, why someone calls doesn't matter. It's just their job to help. At the end of my first day, closing in on 11 o'clock, the building is quiet, the FOI desk is about to close for the night, and we've likely heard the last of the calls. The students and I are circled up in our rolling chairs, and they're telling stories about their favorite calls. Many they've never shared before. As often tends to happen with late-night conversations in college, the mood becomes confessional. Cora Baldwin, a soft-spoken senior about to finish her degree in software engineering, says she believes the calls she answers are the ones she's meant to answer. No coincidences. I want to know whether there have been any calls that the students just can't get out of their heads. One student talks about an hour spent on the phone with a caller helping her plan a trip from Arizona to Canada. Another talks about a kid who called to complain that he was bored, but clearly he was alone and very, very lonely. That was a long call. Then Baldwin tells us this. 2 years ago, while working a day shift, she answered a call from an older gentleman. He had a list of celebrities and wanted her to look up their birthdays, month and day. As I read out the dates, he would say something like, okay, that makes sense. He told her he could deduce things about people with no more information than that. They chatted about what she was studying and what kind of career she had in mind. He was just another caller who needed someone to talk to, she figured. Then he asked her for her birthday. When she told him, he said, "Oh, you don't want to be a software engineer. You want to work with people." He was right, though she had never said it out loud. "Really, I've always had an affinity toward broken people," she says. "I'd like to set up a commune for runaway girls. Growing up in my small town, people really didn't go into protective services. They just stayed in their bad situations. I'd like to do that." This is news to her colleagues on the desk, who have always pictured her as a coder. But it makes sense, they tell me. Cora Baldwin is exactly the kind of person who should be taking in people who need help. "But probably I won't," Baldwin says, shrugging. "I need a job." I say to her, "Still, when I asked you to name a call you can't forget, that's the one you brought up. It must have meant something to you." "It did," she admits. But how that fits into her life, she can't picture yet. And that's the beauty of the landlines at the James E. FOI Information Desk. The internet fools us into believing that the answer to anything can be found with a search engine. But even with all that information so easy to come by, the phones here still keep ringing. Steady proof that sometimes the best answer is having someone to talk to. And now we'll shift over to the Saturday Evening Post, to the Con Watch column, a short article by Steve Weissman, "The Evolution of Romance Scams. The use of AI has made romance scams more convincing." Romance scams are a major problem, and growing. In this scam, a con artist convinces someone that they are in love with them. Once the scammer has created an emotional connection and gained the victim's trust, they start asking for money under a variety of pretenses. In 2022, Americans lost $1.3 billion to romance scams, a substantial increase from 2021, when losses were $547 million. The use of AI for deepfake videos and voice cloning has made these scams even more convincing. In 2022, the Nigerian cybercriminal gang known as the Yahoo Boys began using AI during video chats to impersonate romantic interests. By 2024, scammers were using advanced face swapping and voice cloning technology to alter their appearances and accents to maintain long video conversations under phony personae. According to the FTC, nearly 60% of the romance scams reported in 2025 started on social media platforms, particularly Facebook and Instagram, rather than on dating sites. While anyone can be the victim of a romance scam, the FBI notes that the elderly, women, and the widowed are particularly vulnerable. Scammers are combining romance scams with celebrity impersonation, too, convincing victims that they are involved with a celebrity who urgently needs money. One Argentinian woman sent more than $15,000 to someone using AI-generated deepfake videos to impersonate George Clooney. In recent years, the romance scam has evolved. Scammers claim to have inside knowledge about investing, often in cryptocurrencies, and direct victims to phony websites designed to look like legitimate trading platforms. Not long after investing, the victim discovers that there was no real investment, and they have lost all their money. The investment scam known as Sha Shu Pan, or pig butchering, originated in China in 2019. The name is derived from the practice of luring victims and fattening them up before slaughter. Fraudsters convince victims to continually invest more money, then swindle them out of all of it. Commenting on this growing trend, New York Attorney General Letitia James said, "Sophisticated fraudsters are increasingly using dating apps and social media to trick users into bogus investment schemes. The personal and sometimes romantic nature of these scams can often leave their victims feeling ashamed and isolated." How do you avoid romance scams? Be skeptical of anyone who declares love quickly online without meeting. Then ask for money to assist with emergencies or too-good-to-be-true opportunities. Watch out for social media profile pictures that look overly professional or model-like. Do a reverse image search of profile photos on Google Images or TinEye to see if they've appeared elsewhere. Check the person's brokerage credentials at FINRA's Central Registration Depository, that's brokercheck.finra.org. The database will tell you if the broker is licensed and reveal any disciplinary actions against them. Similar information is available through your state's Security Regulations Office. Remember that real celebrities don't reach out to strangers online to start romantic relationships. Never invest in something you do not completely understand. Check out the SEC's investor education website, investor.gov. Scammers are convincing, so ensure the person making money isn't the scam artist taking yours. Steve Weissman is a lawyer, college professor, author, and one of the country's leading experts in cybersecurity, identity theft, and scams. He was the author of this article. And now let's shift back to Reader's Digest, the Everyday Heroes column. The Best Kind of Auto Care, a learning experience for students, leads to freedom for single mothers, by Sydney Page from the Washington Post. Jessica Rader knew she was getting a car. Still, when the keys to a 2007 gold Prius were handed to her, she wept. "It's not just about the car," says Rader. It's about community. Students at Louisa County High School in Mineral, Virginia, spent several months repairing and refurbishing the car before they presented it to Rader, a single mother of three. For the past 8 years, students enrolled in the school's automotive technology program have been reviving time-worn vehicles and giving them to single mothers for free. The giveaway program is done in partnership with Giving Words, a local nonprofit that supports single mothers, mainly through car repairs and donations. A broken-down car means she can lose her job, miss her appointments, says Eddie Brown, who founded Giving Words with his wife, Jenny Brown, in 2018. Single mothers are relying on Ubers, buses, and family. And some of those can be unreliable, he says. The Browns were both single parents before they met. The idea came from our own experiences being single parents and struggling with transportation issues, Eddie says. He taught himself how to do simple car repairs and soon began fixing other people's cars in his driveway. Eddie and Jenny focused on helping single mothers because around 80% or more of single parents in the United States are mothers. The Browns formed partnerships with local repair shops, as well as Louisa County High School and Charlottesville Area Technical Education Center, to be able to do more repairs and help more women. The cars are donated by individuals and automotive businesses. Since its inception, Giving Words has provided more than 60 cars to single mothers in need of a vehicle. High school students worked on about half of those cars, and the rest were refurbished by repair shops. Getting the students involved has a direct impact on them. It builds character and empathy, Eddie says. Everything has a ripple effect. About 20 students work on each car, handling tasks such as fluid changes and battery testing, as well as repairs on brakes, tires, and heating and cooling systems. They get a real shop experience, says Shane Robertson, an automotive teacher at the school. You've got real life intersecting with education. When a car is complete, it's towed to a shop to undergo a safety inspection before students present it to the new owner. Before winter break last year, Holden Peckery, 16, and his classmates presented a repaired vehicle to a woman with a baby. We raised the garage doors and we all clapped for her, he says. It was nice. I put the license plate on the car for her, and she had a little baby in her arms. Knowing where the cars are going, Peckery says, is motivating. It gives you more of a purpose. Rader says she remains stunned by the students' dedication. It gave me a different perspective on adolescence. There was nothing in return for them. She has three sons, ages 15, 9, and 5, one of whom lives with his father. Before the students fixed up the car for her, Rader often relied on lifts from friends and family to get to work and to get her children to activities. Rader had long struggled with drug addiction, she says, and after becoming sober in March 2022, she lived in a transitional home where she was told about Giving Words. It wasn't even 3 months later, and they gave me a car, Rader says. Because I had that vehicle, I was able to go from a part-time job to a full-time job. I was able to start school. She finally had a car to drive her sons to and from school, to doctor appointments, and extracurricular activities. Rader says the students' generosity has left a lasting impression. There are people, she says, who just want to help people. And that was The Best Kind of Auto Care by Sydney Page. And finally, again from the Reader's Digest, now from Glad to Hear It, Stories to Make Your Day. They Made It Stick. Joanne Miller's fourth grade students in Volusia County, Florida, call themselves the Kindness Squad and aim to spread positivity far and wide. But one of their own needed some uplifting earlier this year. Sophia Campbell was having a bad day and admitted she did not feel smart. To cheer her up, Sophia's classmates covered her desk and chair in brightly colored post-it notes with messages on them reminding Sophia that she is smart and amazing, beautiful, brave, a hard worker, and like pure gold to this class. Miller filmed Sophia finding the notes and posted the video on Facebook. In it, Sophia exclaims, "I'm laughing and crying," before running to hug a classmate. "This was 100% their idea," Miller wrote of the kids in her Facebook post. "No state test can measure this. It's empathy in action." Sink or swim. They don't call it the Windy City for nothing. A powerful gust in Chicago's lakefront area this past February blew a stroller with an 8-month-old baby girl inside it into Lake Michigan. Leo Kundiff saw it happen, and despite not knowing how to swim, he instantly jumped into the lake, grabbed the girl's stroller, and fought to keep it above water, unsure how long he could stay afloat. Another onlooker, Louis Capehost, saw Kundiff struggling, so he took off his jacket and tossed one end of it to Kundiff while holding on to one sleeve. Kundiff grabbed the other, allowing Capehost to pull him and the infant to safety. As for why he leaped into the lake, Kundiff told the Chicago Sun-Times, "Turns out, if I have to choose fight or flight, I guess I'm a fighter." The party line. Outside a bookstore in Abilene, Texas, one of America's most conservative cities, and a tattoo parlor in San Francisco, California, one of America's most liberal cities, sit payphones that connect only to each other, inviting passers-by to call people with opposing political views and try to relate to each other. Installed in January, the phones are a social experiment by biotech firm Matter Neuroscience. "Our thesis," co-founder Ben Goldhirsch told ABC News, "is that humans, if given the opportunity, will really look to find common ground, because biologically, that actually gives us a lot more happiness." And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. Today's program is supported by the Durham Lions Club. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.